Welcome to the Mellow Mama podcast, where I talk all things conscious living and conscious, respectful parenting with the help of lots of great books, resources, and of course, my own experience as a mom. If you're new here, what's up? I'm Caitlin, and today I'm going to continue my book club series on Dr. Marshall Rosenberg's book, Nonviolent Communication. If you're new to the concept of conscious parenting and you're like, all right, cool, found a podcast and give me all the tools, the tips, the tricks to adjust my child's behavior, to change them, to tell me what I need to do to fix and adjust them. Their behavior's making me super uncomfortable, unhappy, dysregulated, or I'm resorting to old patterns of shame and criticism and it just feels like it's not working, or you're like, I don't want to operate there because I know it's not the healthiest option for me, for my child, and definitely not for our relationship to grow, flourish, and thrive in an authentic way, in a connected way. Yes, I'm your girl. I'm here. I've got you, but I need you to know right out of the gate that the long road is definitely worth the wait. It's worth the travel. It's worth the journey. And that's what I have to offer you. Quick fixes and blame, shame, manipulation. Those are all things that we're actually moving away from. So reading material like Dr. Marshall Rosenberg's book, Nonviolent Communication, is a piece of that puzzle that's going to be so integral. But I want you to start with my other book club series on Eckhart Tolle's book, A New Earth, because I really think they go hand in hand. I say this in the beginning of every episode, just to clarify. Sorry, you're going to hear it a couple more times if you listen to the whole book club series or both of them. But I think understanding your deep-rooted subconscious insecurities that have been sort of molded from the time you were an itty-bitty baby throughout your childhood and adolescent experience and beyond, and then figuring out, okay, where is my ego showing up and kind of making it difficult for me to become the actor in my life as opposed to the reactor? And what's the pain body doing? Where is that showing up in my life? What does that have to do with my ego? And who am I trying to protect? What are the roles that I'm playing? What are the performative measures that I've taken throughout my life in order to get my needs met, whether on a conscious or subconscious level? And how are they still showing up in my relationships and in the way that I operate in the world? Once we've got that foundation, we can move forward into things like NVC, nonviolent communication, take a closer look, because we're regulated enough emotionally, we can peel back the layers to say, like, okay, what can I do differently? How can I stop taking the behavior of other people personally long enough to adjust the style in which I communicate to other people? And it might even be to yourself. So go check out my previous episodes. First, listen to Eckhart Tolle, A New Earth, as I dig through the chapters in that book. It is so transformative and a huge piece of the puzzle if you're hoping to live a more conscious life, especially with your children. If you want to raise your children consciously, parent them with intentionality, slowness, presence, authenticity, and peace, this is step one. Because otherwise, you're going to get triggered all the time and not even know why. You're going to blame the child. You're not going to get curious about them, their experience, or even their development or biology. You're just going to be like, this is annoying, frustrating, and overwhelming. Let me resort back to the old tools that were given to me. Were they effective? Did they actually create this incredible bond, trust, an amazing relationship between me and my caregiver? Maybe not. Is my self-esteem super high? Probably not. But you know what? I don't have any other option right now because I'm dysregulated and I need to fix the problem in front of me. So here we are, right? It's an endless cycle, but I'm here to help you shift things. And like I said, that's where to start. So go listen to those if you haven't already. That way you can start to put this glorious material into practice in your day-to-day. It is just so amazing. And the main mission for me personally as a parent, and I would say the shared mission of all of the parents in my community, is to be what we want to teach our kids, to be the hero we want to see in our kids. We want to show up modeling the life that we want them to live in the way that we hope for them to live it, to be influential to them, not a puppet master, puppeteer, whatever that's called. We want to be the influencer in their life, the person that they look to for the best possible example for not just like how to live and how to, whatever their idea of success is. For me, it's like just being super confident and operating in an authentic way in my day to day, but like even just like joy, like showing up in a joyful way, in a grateful way, romanticizing my life. I want my kids to operate there. And when we can also model for them the following, chapter 6, requesting that which would enrich life, and an enriching style of relationship, connecting with others and communicating with others, finally making it to this first chapter, this chapter's discussion. I think that beautiful, beautiful things can happen, not just, again, modeling the communication style that we want our children to experience and witness and move forward with themselves. Like, we're equipping our children with healthy communication, which many of us did not experience this. The average person experienced, in fact, the violent form of communication. And that does not mean screaming, yelling, name-calling, labeling, shame necessarily. It might be as simple as not knowing how to accurately articulate your feelings, identify your needs, make requests in a way that's healthy without passive aggression or subtle manipulation that's underlying the communication. This is where we get to flip the script and we get to be, again, what we want our children to be. We get to show up in a way that actually gives them the tools in the short term and in the long term for just truly thriving, amazing relationships, and also, I don't know, just like a really healthy way of living, a compassionate way, connected way of living and interacting with others forever. So I'm really, really glad you're here listening. Thank you so much to all of you that have listened to my previous book club episodes and, of course, the book club episodes on Nonviolent Communication, A Language of Life by Marshall Rosenberg. I really think that it's world-changing work to be raising children in this way, raising super intrinsically motivated, confident kids that know they're loved without conditions. And I think it's really powerful as we do that, what it does, the impact that it does on us, and it allows us to heal bit by bit, day by day, to know and understand the exact same things about ourselves. All that said, let's get into it. Chapter 6, requesting that which would enrich life. I like that Marshall Rosenberg he wrote this book so perfectly that, you know, we go step by step. We've understood the first three main aspects of nonviolent communication: observing, feeling, what we're needing. And now we have to move into the component of what we're actually requesting. And so much of the time, for me personally, in the past, before reading this book, and even after reading it, slipping into old patterns, I find myself thinking that I'm making the request by just stating how I feel, or, you know, projecting. In the previous chapter, we talked about how we might think we're articulating our needs, but we're actually just sharing an interpretation of another person. You're making me feel this way by doing X, Y, or Z, or, and when we say you're making me feel, it could be like inadequate. Well, this inadequate is not a feeling. Disappointed, lonely, discouraged, those are feelings. But it's such a tricky thing to navigate. So many of us just do not communicate in this way or know how to. It's an amazing thing to learn, but it's going to be fun to also learn how to actually ask for what it is that we want, what it is that's going to actually fulfill us, fulfill our needs. How do we express those requests so that others are receptive to them? Or, as he puts it here, more willing to respond compassionately to our needs. It's really common for people to interpret needs being expressed, even in the nonviolent way, as a personal attack, as criticism. And this chapter for me has been really pivotal in communicating my needs in my own life to the people that I love in a way that becomes non-threatening, or at least less threatening, and it kind of disarms them and allows them to see me before them, just simply making that a request for my needs, not making some sort of commentary on who they are, their character, how good of a job they're doing as a person, partner, parent, whatever. And you could imagine having this podcast and my platform and all the resources that I provide to parents and people, that in my personal life, it can be pretty delicate. I honestly have a hard time talking about a lot of the subject matter in real time with the people that are closest to me that I think would benefit from it most, because I never want them to get the impression that I think I'm better or know more about anything. Or, you know, if you've been listening for a long time, or if you've been followed me around for a while, you know that it's just such an uncomfortable thing. If you're practicing conscious parenting yourself, it might be something that you've come into, you know, that's come into play for you, where you're like, gosh, how do I not come off like a pretentious, I'm so enlightened jerk? Right? So this chapter is going to be really helpful for you, I think, like it has been for me. He starts off by giving the advice to use positive action language. And this is something that, as a parenting coach, I teach often. It can be very confusing for our children when we use words like, don't do that, or I don't want you over there, because we're not clarifying what we do want. We express what we are requesting rather than what we are not requesting. And just as a side note, I think living life in this way can be really powerful if we want to just move in a positive direction and be viewed in a positive light and have a positive impact on the people around us. For example, knowing what you are for versus what you are against. It's like a subtle adjustment that makes a very vast difference. If you are constantly talking about what you can't stand, what you don't like, what you don't want, and you never talk about what you love and what you really admire, what you enjoy experiencing or seeing, what you want, it's obvious, even just stating it like that, who would be just generally more pleasant to be around, one. But also, it's kind of murky, right? When we operate from the negative space and we're just constantly saying, don't do that, don't do this, I don't like that. Well, it's kind of hard to like really connect with somebody operating there, because it's not clear what you want, what you like. So that's the simplest little shift that we can make in our daily life or more positivity. But when it comes to communicating, it just makes sense that we need to get clear and start to move into that positive action language as opposed to the negative. He says, how do you do a don't? And this is a line of a children's song he's referencing. All I know is I feel won't when I'm told to do a don't. Those lyrics reveal two problems commonly encountered when requests are worded in the negative. People are often confused as to what is actually being requested, and furthermore, negative requests are likely to provoke resistance. Raise your hand, or don't raise your hand if you're like driving along. If you have given your child a don't and noticed that maybe there's that resistance, they don't exactly receive the request that you think you're making, because it's just confusing. When we switch into positive action language, instead of stop hitting your sister or don't hit your sister, we could say, and this sounds like such an obvious one, you're like, obviously the request is stop hitting, but what do we want our children to do? This is what they need to know in a very clear, calm, confident way. I need you to be gentle with your sister. I'd like for you to take a few steps back from your sister. Right, and we're getting specific, or even, I'd love for you to play a different game with your sister. I'd love for you, and then maybe throw out some ideas. Can we think of something else to do other than wrestling or other than being rough and tumble right now? Instead of feeling like you're going into control mode, getting frustrated and annoyed and starting to tell yourself the crazy stories that your child is defiant and they're against you and they're out to get you and manipulative, as opposed to just simply one, confused as to what you actually want, two, not understanding where to go next, and three, feeling like you are simply trying to control and manipulate them and you're upset with them. A lot of the time that we speak in this negative action language, it doesn't seem collaborative, to say the least, when we're interacting with our children in this way. It's definitely coming from the behaviorist, I'm in control, you do as I say when I say it, stop that right now, don't do that. And it moves us away from the connection, collaboration opportunity, whereas positive action language moves us right into it. It's the most natural flow in terms of where we go next in the communication. When we make actual requests for what we do want, we can start to make some real progress and also kind of nip things in the bud moving forward. Our children really start to understand what it is that we want from them, and the same thing, it's a mutual respect dynamic in the world of conscious parenting and conscious relationships, which brings me to my next point, that while all of that's so relevant for our interactions with our children, positive action language, this is super important for all communication, especially with any adult people in your life. And it's easy to slip out of it. And I like the example he gives of a woman at his workshop who said that her request to her husband actually backfired because she worded it with negative action language. She said, I don't want you to spend so much time at work. And 3 weeks later, he said, hey, you know, no, you said I want you to spend less time at work, so I actually signed up for a golf tournament. She had successfully communicated to him what she did not want, his spending so much time at work, but had failed to request what she did want. Encouraged to reword her request, she thought a minute and said, I wish I would have told him that I would like him to spend at least one evening a week at home with the children and me. Now, I know what I thought the first time I read this, like, how on earth could somebody not get that from, like, just the basic sentence there? Hey, I wish you didn't spend so much time at work. You know what? You're right, honey. Looks like it'll be a golf tournament for me, right? Like, oh my gosh, like, how? What in the world? But at the same time, you know, we set ourselves up to fail often by just assuming that people understand our requests in the negative or can read our minds or are operating in the exact same world that we are in terms of our internal world and our personal lived experience. We can, and it is, as Marshall Rosenberg would put it, life alienating for us to be there. And I always say expectations are premeditated resentments. If we set someone up with this expectation to just simply get exactly what we're saying without making the real request itself for what we actually want, it's sort of unfair. Although I know it might sound ridiculous at first with an example like that one with the golf tournament. But it is ridiculous for us to have that expectation without making the request in the positive. And it's also so liberating to move in the other direction and to start phrasing what we want very directly, positively, and clearly for the people around us. It breeds so much connection and understanding. And while sometimes even that I could see turning into some form of, interpreting it like it's a personal attack. I wish that, you know, one evening a week you are here with me and the kids could turn into, well, don't you know how hard I work? And don't you know all the things that I'm doing? I could see that happening, which I like to remind people listening and reading this book, especially for the first time, that nonviolent communication does not, it's not some sort of like perfect little setup. People still have, like I said in the beginning of this episode, the ego to work through, the pain body to work through. And often we do take everything personally. We are so sensitive and insecure that someone just simply expressing a need and making an actual just simple request could be somehow misinterpreted as a personal attack. So I like to clarify that. Like, absolutely, things like that might be able to happen, which is why I say read Eckhart Tolle's book first and then use that information to then move forward and start implementing this. But you can obviously read one without the other, and it's super interesting to think about and contemplate. He talks a little bit about a time where he was also interviewed, sort of a debate-style interview, and he found himself disappointed at the way he was communicating, the style of communication he was using in the interview. He was very defensive and upset, riled up, and he told himself, if I ever get this opportunity again, I'm determined not to do what I did on that program. I'm not going to be defensive. I'm not going to let them make a fool of me. Notice that he's speaking to himself in terms of what he did not want to do rather than in terms of what he did want to do. And then, of course, a chance to redeem himself came the very next week. He was invited to continue the debate on the same program. And all the way to the studio, he repeated to himself all the things that he didn't want to do. When the program started, can you guess what happened? He said about 10 seconds in, that is exactly what happened again. All the things he didn't want to do just started pouring out of him, all the things he was so determined to avoid. And he thought, if only he would have identified what he did want to do instead of what he didn't want to do. And I think this is, again, just so relevant for parents. How often do I hear from my course students and other people that I work with, or just people that comment on my material, I keep falling back into the same pattern. People message me this all the time. I know what to do, but I keep doing what I don't want to do. I keep reverting back to my old conditioning, my old thought patterns, my old behaviorist ways, if they started raising their children this way and are kind of trying to make a little segue, a pivot into a more conscious child rearing style and practice. What is the common factor here? It's always when I ask them, well, can you tell me a little bit more about what happens after there's a rupture in the relationship? I apologize and we repair. And then I say, I don't want to do that again. Do you notice the theme? It's the same as what Marshall's referring to in his own experience. What we don't want to do is just going to keep happening until we clarify what we do want. What systems do we have in place? And this is why, if you haven't checked out my Mellow Moments, my downloadable audio recordings, just like a perfect little plug here, but it's just so relevant, seriously, and all the things that I create are so intentional and made with so much love, but my Mellow Moments are like $10 a piece, and it's basically a little blip of having me in your pocket. If you are like, I want to rewrite the program. So for example, if you are like, I keep yelling, I have been in a rut and I'm just yelling all week. I'm doing okay. And then like a third through the day, I find myself yelling or feeling like that's what I have to do to get my kids to listen to me, to get my kids to even pay attention to me or notice me. Kate, I don't want to keep yelling. Instead of saying, I don't want to keep yelling, say, the next time I feel like yelling, I want to listen to 478 breathing. step out of the room for a moment, listen to my mellow moment with Kate, or the next time I feel like yelling, I'm going to pop in the talk through a tantrum mellow moment on my phone. I'm just going to like throw in a headphone and listen to that and focus on my breath for a second and just come back. That's what I want to do. The next time that I'm dysregulated and I feel like I'm going to yell, I want to listen to my midday affirmations and get a little pep talk from Kate. This is exactly why I designed them, so that instead of being like, I don't know what I want to do, but I know what I don't want to do. I don't want to keep yelling. I don't want to be shaming my kids. I don't want to be reactive. I don't want to feel like I'm going to be physical with my children. Well, all of that is going to keep happening until you clarify what you do want and what system you have in place. Again, what tools you do have to shift the way that you are currently behaving, the way you're currently reacting. And a lot of it also has to do with what do you want to do in terms of like your healing journey? How can we repair the system that you have been programmed with? Your subconscious programming, your conditioning from your childhood, adolescent experience, what's been taught as normal to you and normalized for you through your lived experience. What do we want to do instead? What do we want in general? What's our goal? This is a great place to start. But again, like my mellow moments are so good. If you're like, I don't know what I want to do. I know what I don't want to do, but I don't know what I want to do instead. Like sometimes I just feel like I have no other option. Once you get clear and say, I know the second I feel like yelling, I'm going to grab a mellow moment, $10 for me to start recreating a system, start doing something different. And then you won't even need me necessarily. You don't need the mellow moment all the time. Goodness gracious. Like I know as a mom, it's not always possible that you're going to just grab your phone, throw in a headphone and listen, or be in the car and go through your files, find the mellow moment that you want and listen to it. Obviously, I designed this so that you can be equipped long term, so that you can say, I want to do my 4-7-8 breathing the next time I feel like yelling. The next time I feel like yelling, I'm going to give myself a pep talk. I'm going to use some of my mantras that I've learned through doing Kate's affirmations in the middle of the day, or my morning affirmations, or my end of day affirmations. The next time I feel like being like physical with my children, I'm going to stop myself and do EFT tapping because I've learned to do it through my mellow moment with Kate. Do you see what I'm saying? Do you see why I felt it necessary to talk about my mellow moments for a second? It's relevant, okay? I'm not just trying to sell you stuff. I really want to help. And I think sometimes, even for myself, without having those tools in place, I would just keep going the I don't want to do this route and not the here's what I'm going to do route, which is, again, so liberating and also so empowering. Just how amazing to be like, I know what options I've got. I'm good. We're good. We got this. In addition to using positive language, we also want to word our requests in the form of concrete actions that others can undertake and to avoid vague, abstract, or ambiguous phrasing. This one is my favorite example in the book. He says a cartoon. I don't know why. Maybe it's not my favorite. I've probably said that a million times. I just love it. This whole book. But he says a cartoon depicts a man who has fallen into a lake. As he struggles to swim, he shouts to his dog on shore, Lassie, get help. In the next frame, the dog is lying on a psychiatrist's couch. We all know how opinions vary as to what constitutes help. Some members of my family, when asked to help with the dishes, think help means supervision. A couple in distress attending a workshop provides an additional illustration of how non-specific language can hamper understanding and communication. I want you to let me be me, the woman declared. I do, he retorted. No, you don't, she insisted. And when asked to express herself in a positive action way, the woman replied, I want you to give me the freedom to grow and be myself. And this is, again, just a vague blanket statement. It's also likely to provoke some defensiveness, right? Like, what do you mean I don't let you grow and be yourself? Like, again, and then we're just down the rabbit hole. We're down that dark path of a life alienating communication, violent communication. And when Marshall Rosenberg asked this woman to really clearly formulate the request. Like, what do you actually want him to do? She said, it's kind of awkward, but if I were to be precise, I guess what I want for you to do is to smile and say that anything I do is okay. And he points out that often the use of vague and abstract language can mask oppressive or interpersonal games. I want you to play a little game with yourself too, to test this on yourself. The next time you feel sad, lonely, discouraged about any relationship in your life, or maybe your a work dynamic, any relationship, it doesn't have to be a romantic partnership, and you're thinking to yourself, my needs just are not met. This person does not treat me well. They do not treat me the way that I deserve. I want you to ask yourself the real question, what concrete actions do I need to see to feel differently? If I felt joyful about my relationship dynamic, whatever kind of relationship it might be, what would the person be doing on the other end that would make me feel that way? What do I want? What is the actual request that I can make? What do I want them to be doing? What am I going to ask for? And sometimes it can be kind of, it's a very vulnerable thing to make requests for real, to really, I mean, we've already kind of been there in previous episodes, acknowledging our needs, acknowledging how we really feel requires some courage sometimes. It's definitely, I think a little bit, it seems, I guess, on the surface that it would be easier to just make these sort of vague blanket statements, I wish you'd treat me better, than saying, I would really love for you to compliment me more. I'd love for you to call me this insert compliment here or sweet pet name here. Or I would love for you to spend every night of the week with me. You know, like making specific requests might feel silly or vulnerable, or make you might feel insecure doing it. And there's a lot of reason. I mean, geez, as children, most of our needs, I think, for me personally, I will speak just to my own personal experience, but also, I guess, slightly also to what I observe as a parenting coach and educator. Children are made to feel very inconvenient, and I'm kind of breaking my own nonviolent communication rules, but I see that inconvenience is definitely projected onto a lot of interactions between adult people and young people. If they have a question, it's annoying. It's like, oh, okay, like, of course, like, don't you know this? Or even, you know, people in school, I just feel like having to take your one of the children to the bathroom at recess, like, come on, let's go, right? From a very early age, it's kind of communicated, I guess, not by Marshall Rosenberg standards per se, but it is communicated in so many other ways. I mean, there are many ways that we communicate that are nonverbal, that, you know, a child's requests, their requests are not convenient to us, important to us, valid to us. Oftentimes, they seem irrational to us. I often hear people say things like, okay, yeah, I'm so sorry you got apple juice instead of orange, or I'm so sorry that you got a blue cup instead of the pink cup. Oh gosh, the world is crumbling. To a child, when we as adult people would be like, oh shoot, I did not order this at a restaurant. I wanted something else. Or when we have it in our mind, something that we want so badly, a snack or show we want to watch. I don't know. We all have preferences, you know, these are needs. And for whatever reason, when children have preferences, it's inconvenient and annoying and unnecessary to honor and respect those, or like just even have an interest in trying to acknowledge them. So of course, when we're adults and we're trying to communicate the nonviolent way, and we're trying to articulate our feelings, Why do I feel what I feel? What is the actual feeling that I'm feeling without blaming or projecting onto somebody else or sharing a personal interpretation of another person and what they're quote unquote doing to me? Like, what am I really actually feeling? Even if you have to refer back to the list, okay? And then what is the need behind what I'm feeling? Why do I feel that way? What need is going unmet? And then getting down to the nitty gritty, what am I requesting? This is vulnerable stuff because mainly for me, my suspicion as to why it's so vulnerable and hard is because we have been rejected so many times. We're conditioned to be shut down and rejected and for people to take our requests as some sort of inconvenience or personal attack, criticism, shame, guilt, and form of manipulation. We have been trained from the time we were so small to think subconsciously, if I actually make a request, if I'm honest about what I want and what I need, how I feel about it, I could possibly be put down, shamed, criticized, guilted. And at the end of the day, I'm most likely, if none of that happens, it'll just be invalidated. Like, oh, you don't need that right now. Oh my, like, okay. So dramatic. Oh, you need the pink, right? Like every little thing but our requests being met might happen. And there are obviously cases where, yes, there are many times in my own childhood where my requests were considered and met, and that's lovely. But I would say that more often than not, it was an inconvenience to people in my life as a young person to make requests and have needs, even if it was like, oh, I really would love to listen to this song in the car versus whatever was already playing. All right, the list goes on and on, but I hope that that example helps you in your day-to-day, especially if you are a parent, navigating the reconditioning of, okay, how do my children probably interpret making a request to me? Is it easy for them? Do they feel afraid to do that? Would they be already kind of programmed subconsciously to be like, oh no, it's probably going to be a no from mom, and it's probably going to be met with some condescension, and she's probably going to be annoyed that I'm even making the request, right? Notice yourself, like just like the other exercise, I really want you to just make a game of it. Start to pay attention to yourself. Start to pay attention to the way that you interact with your children and with other people, maybe your spouse too. And ask yourself, like, wow, could this be why even for me to make an honest request and to clarify what the request might be is tricky for me and vulnerable, and maybe kind of, for me, some of my requests feel embarrassing. And I think that's really interesting too. Marshall Rosenberg makes a statement here that I think is really profound and, again, perfectly in alignment with anyone trying to parent consciously or live in a more conscious way. He's having a back and forth discussion with a client, and it goes like this. What are you wanting that you are not receiving? I don't know what I want. I guess that you would say that. Why? My theory is that we get depressed because we're not getting what we want, and we're not getting what we want because we've never been taught to get what we want, which is exactly what I was just saying. Instead, we've been taught to be good little boys and girls and good mothers and fathers. If we're going to be one of those good things, better get used to being depressed. Depression is the reward we get for being good, in air quotes. But if you want to feel better, I'd like you to clarify what you would like people to do to make life more wonderful for you. This person says, I just want someone to love me. That's hardly unreasonable, is it? And he said, it's a good start. Now, I'd like you to clarify what you would like people to do that would fulfill your need to be loved. For example, what could I do right now? Oh, you know, I'm not sure I do. I'd like you to tell me what you would like me or others to do to give you the love you're looking for. She says, that's hard. Yes, it can be difficult to make clear requests, but think how hard it will be for others to respond to our request if we're not even clear on what it is. I'm starting to get clear on what I want from others to fulfill my need for love, but it's embarrassing. That's so interesting that I just said that. And then I said it was interesting. But yes, very often it is embarrassing. So what would you like for me or others to do? If I really reflect upon what I'm requesting when I ask to be loved, I suppose I want you to guess what I want before I'm even aware of it. And then I want you to always do it. I'm grateful for your clarity. I hope you can see how you are not likely to find someone who can fulfill your need for love if that's what it takes. Often, his clients were able to see how the lack of awareness of what they wanted from others actually contributed significantly to their frustrations and depression. Again, ask yourself if you're frustrated, if you're feeling depressed and discouraged in any relationship dynamic that you're experiencing right now. Ask if you've made a very clear request, and then ask yourself, if not, what is my request? What do I want? And then take a look at the requests and be like, wait, is this fair? Is this a fair expectation for any person? Is there a way that I'm contributing to the frustration by, again, having these premeditated resentments in the form of expectations, especially unrealistic ones, unidentified requests? I just basically want this person to be like a perfect mind reader who knows exactly what I need even when I don't, and then just do it. This is not, like he says, this is not likely to happen, but it's how so many of us operate. Which brings me to the next part of this chapter, making requests consciously. He says that you can make some requests without putting them into words. For example, if you're in the kitchen and your sister's in the living room watching TV and she calls out, "I'm thirsty," it's pretty clear that, you can get her something to drink. But in other instances, we might express our discomfort and incorrectly assume that the listener has understood the underlying request. For example, a woman might say to her husband, "I'm annoyed you forgot the butter and onions I asked for you to pick up for dinner." While it may be obvious to her that she's asking him to go back to the store, the husband may think that her words were uttered solely to make him feel guilty. At least, and you know what, honestly, that's how I would interpret that. I'd be like, I'm so sorry. Oh my gosh. I'm the worst. Dang it. Like, failed at that one. Forgot those things, and now my significant other hates me. This is the internal dialogue that I would have, and I know so many other people would too. And some people might turn it into a match, right? Like, oh, well, yeah, because you never forget anything. Oh, remember last week when you didn't do that, da 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 do? Okay, and then we're in the real violent mode. Even more often, he says, we are simply not conscious of what we're requesting when we speak. We talk to others or at them without knowing how to engage in a dialogue with them. We toss our words using the presence of others as a wastebasket. It's a deep statement, and I think that I say this a lot in my parenting content, but I think it needs to be said again. I always say, are you talking to your children or are you talking at them? Especially once you notice that they're a little dysregulated, maybe seeming overwhelmed and overstimulated. And I always ask first of all, are they hungry or tired? Because this is obviously going to impact behavior more than anything. But if no and no, have they been connected with? Have you like really made eye contact and like hung out with them, done something that they wanted to do for even like 10 minutes? This is a huge piece of it too. And even if you're like, yes, I've hung out with them a ton, are there other dynamics going on? There are just so many things to consider. But that one is huge. Are we talking at our kids? Are we talking to them? Are we in dialogue with them? And you know how this feels with other adult people. But can you imagine all day long just being barked at and only talked to when it's like, I need something from you, or we need to go, or we need to get off to this place, or we're having dinner, come on. Everything is just like blah, 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 instead of like real communication, real dialogue with another person. And he said, like, I want to say that again, we toss out words using the presence of others as a wastebasket. Words are a beautiful thing, and to use them intentionally and to speak on purpose is a huge shift for the average person, I think. Marshall Rosenberg says his belief is that whenever we say something to another person, we are requesting something in return. It might just be an empathic connection, a verbal or nonverbal acknowledgement, as with the guy on the train. There's an example where there's a man on the train and he just keeps saying, "I've never seen a train go so slow in my life," but he's not actually requesting anything or stating his needs or feelings. And so his wife starts to take it personally, and this whole interchange is about how he's really making it hard for anybody to understand his wants or needs, his requests, and to actually connect with him. Whereas if he were to say, "I feel frustrated because I want this train to go faster in order to get to our gate on time. I'm scared that we're going to miss our flight." Then we can communicate back and connect to this person. But without the feelings and needs attached to the request, it's really difficult to understand what it is this guy's even trying to accomplish by complaining over and over again that he's never seen a train go so slow in his life. But back to what I was reading, sometimes we're just looking, like the man on the train, for a verbal or nonverbal acknowledgement, just to have that feeling of being understood, that somebody cares about our perspective, knows how we feel, what we're experiencing, and they get it and they're connected to us for it. Sometimes that's really all it is that we're talking for, which is so interesting. That's my third challenge for you. Didn't realize I was going to be giving assignments this episode, but the third thing I really want you to do is start to ask yourself, how often am I just talking out and just like using the presence of other people as a wastebasket? Speaking on purpose, being more intentional about how we talk, how much we talk, what we talk about is, in my opinion, one of the easiest ways to really get back to the present moment. Remembering how Marshall Rosenberg said, are we using the presence of other people as a wastebasket? I mean, just talking at them, throwing things out there for kind of like in this next part too, how he said, we're just basically, even if we're just talking to talk, it's not really that. We are making a subconscious request for connection. Maybe we just want to be heard. We just want to be understood for a second. Even if we're not making clear requests, maybe the request really is the fact like we're just talking so that somebody else will hear us and will feel important. Marshall Rosenberg also says we might be requesting honesty. We want to know the listener's honest reaction to our words, or we may be requesting an action that we hope would fulfill our needs. The clearer we are on what we want back from the other person, the more likely it is that our needs will be met, and that communication can remain nonviolent. I want to add in here too that the more likely the other person's needs will be met also, because the better we get at articulating our needs and identifying our feelings and making these requests in a conscious way, in a nonviolent way, the better we get at listening for those things from the people in our lives. And this is where I find personally nonviolent communication to be extremely impactful, the listening part. I think that it gets easier and easier with time to do all the things on my end, but putting down your defenses when someone else is expressing their needs and not taking it personally, not moving into life alienating communication in order to what you think you're doing, protect yourself and your ego and your identity and your goodness, is tricky. But I think it gets easier with time, again, as we practice this, we get so good at observing the other and really listening, which moves me into a reflection. This part feels sort of goofy at first, okay, I'm not going to lie. He talks about how so often we might think that we've made a pretty clear request and the other person actually does not understand what we're asking for whatsoever, especially when it's not a super concrete, not vague statement that we've made. And we could maybe ask a simple question like, is that clear? But then a person might just say, yeah, I get that. But instead, asking for them to basically reflect back whatever it is that you've said to them is a good way to better understand, like, if you're actually on the same page, if your needs and feelings and requests are actually going to be understood and met or not. So he starts by saying it's important to express appreciation when your listener tries to meet your request for a reflection. When you ask, could you maybe repeat back to me what it is that you think I'm asking for, just so I can understand if we're on the same page? This is how I personally word this so that it's not like too bizarre. And when this person actually says yes, because it is a bit awkward and uncomfortable and not typically a request that's made by people, can you repeat back what I said, just because I want to make sure that I'm being as clear as I would like to be? This is not exactly something that you hear every day or like often at all in relationship dynamics, again, because this just wasn't modeled for us as the norm in terms of communicating. So people might take it personally, like, what do you think, he puts it, what do you think I am, deaf? Or why are you, quit playing your psychological games? Hopefully, I think if you're just super clear, like, I'm just trying so hard to make sure that I'm being as clear as I could possibly be. And I just want to make sure that you understand what I'm trying to say and that I am doing a good job explaining it or articulating my request to you. So do you mind repeating that back? And even if this person gets it wrong and they've totally misinterpreted what you're saying, it's important to be like, okay, I'm so glad that I asked and I'm so grateful that you were willing to do that, even though it was probably weird. Because now I actually, okay, I understand how you could interpret it that way, but what I actually am trying to request is the following, and you can sort of like learn how to tailor your response and your request in a way that is more easy to understand for the person on the receiving end. Once we've gotten to this point, we can move into what I think everybody's really looking for in these exchanges, and that's honesty and really requesting honesty. Yeah, like knowing what the other person is thinking or knowing what they'd be willing to do or if they'd be willing to shift something or what they're feeling. These are huge. But again, it's important for us to request these things very clearly and in positive language. For example, I would love for you to tell me how you feel about what I just said and your reasons for feeling the way that you do. Similarly, if we want to know what someone's thinking, we don't want to say, here we go again, saying we don't. We want to, I have to say it though, we don't want to say just like, what did you think about that? Or what are your thoughts? Instead, getting specific, we do want to say what specific thoughts we want to hear from this person. I want to know what you thought about my likelihood of hitting my promotion and what your thoughts are on what would make it difficult for me to hit my promotion or what would prevent me from doing that and why. These are clear requests. This is what we do want. And the same thing goes for what the person might be willing to do. For example, I would love for you to let me know if you're willing to help me on Thursday night with the kids so that I can spend some time with friends. If we actually want to get what we want, if we want our needs and our requests to be met, we've got to make them in positive language and specific, nice and clear, so that there's no confusion. And we, even if there is confusion, we just work through it with NVC by our side. Now that we've talked lots and lots about making requests in a conscious way, in an effective way, the nonviolent communication way, we need to differentiate between requests and demands. And this has a lot to do with a lot of the things that I've mentioned already in terms of the parent-child dynamic being in relationship dynamic and not control dynamic. So easy to operate there and slip back into those old patterns. He says, our requests are received as demands when others believe they will be blamed or punished if they don't comply. When people hear a demand, they see only two options, submit or rebel. Either way, the person requesting is perceived as coercive and the listener's capacity to respond compassionately to the request is diminished. The more we in the past have blamed, punished, or laid guilt trips on others when they haven't responded to our requests, the higher the likelihood that our requests will now be heard as demands. We also pay for others' use of such tactics. To the degree that people in our lives have been blamed, punished, or urged to feel guilty for not doing what others have requested, the more likely they are to carry that baggage to every subsequent relationship and hear a demand in any request. I hope that you're hearing that very clearly. If you're someone who's like, I'm using this book, I'm using nonviolent communication, I am making requests in a conscious way, and my partner or my friend, or my parent is simply always taking it personally. It's so hard for them to move out of that mode of the ego. They're just interpreting everything like some sort of personal attack when I'm just trying to get my needs met. I'm trying to voice what I'm feeling based on needs not going unmet and making very clear requests. But again, it just always turns into some sort of argument or back and forth where I'm trying to be clear and the other person is just having a very hard time not taking it personally. I get it. Been there. So have so many, 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 many other people. And that's an important thing to remember too. The baggage that they carry from how difficult it was to get their needs met in childhood and adolescence and other relationships in adult life, right? Where making requests was not only hard to do clearly, because they didn't have these tools in place, but also just articulating feelings and needs in the first place was vulnerable and a challenge. It's a learning curve and everybody's learning. So just be compassionate and remember that sometimes, again, if we have those expectations for someone to be able to just hop right into this and understand what you're reading and apply it to, just because you're reading it and applying it, it's not realistic or fair. And this brings me to the next really great point that sometimes people are going to say no to your requests. Sometimes people are going to have an objection to it. Sometimes people will take it personally. Sometimes people will find it hard to meet your requests. But I like that Marshall Rosenberg clears up here that we don't have to see something as a demand just because they say no to our requests. And we also don't need to give up when someone says no, but what we don't need to do is engage in persuasion and trying to convince them to meet our request in some other way before we've actually understood their point of view and we've become curious about the no, curious about the objection. What is it that is making it difficult for them to say yes to this? What's preventing the yes? This is where real connection happens, real relationship is starting to grow. This is where mutual needs really can start to be met because we start to understand how to actually do that and really, again, be operating from this place of curiosity with the other person as opposed to defensiveness and fear. Having the capacity and the ability to go back and forth between this listening mode and this making a request in a conscious way mode, understanding and identifying our needs and feelings and putting those into request format, and then listening to those come back at us from our partner or our children or any person in our lives that we're communicating with is where true relationships actually come to the surface. Mutual needs are being met. And that goes into the next step of this where we define the objective. of making our requests, what we really want. A relationship based on honesty, empathy, compassion. Marshall Rosenberg writes, "When others trust that our primary commitment is to the quality of the relationship and that we expect this process to fulfill everyone's needs, not just our own, then they can trust that our requests are true requests and not camouflaged demands." This, to me, it sounds so familiar because this is how I teach people to interact with their children. And so often it becomes easier as we parent our children consciously to just do that as opposed to how we, and then taking it, instead of taking it also into our adult relationships is what I'm trying to say. And it's so fascinating that, again, our expectations are so unrealistic and so high for what our partners are supposed to be capable of when they weren't modeled any of this. So giving that compassion and that grace and listening, being in curiosity mode, allows us to truly develop conscious relationships where our partner can feel safe. Like they can make, my partner can make a request to me without me taking it personally. They're not attacking me. I know that their very mission and objective is to simply have a really incredible relationship dynamic where both of our needs are met. He points out lastly a couple of thoughts to scan your mind for when making a request so that you don't get into demand mode. Things like, he should be cleaning up after himself. Anything with shame, should all over people. We're not doing that. Don't should all over yourself. She's supposed to do what I ask. Again, more shame. I deserve to get a raise. This is the ego. I'm justified in having them stay later. I have a right to more time off. Again, it's just all the ego. When we frame our needs with these thoughts, we're bound to judge others when they don't do as we request. And when we move into judgment mode, criticism mode, we are very far from connection mode. And we're also very far from just simply understanding the other person. That it's just not personal. Like really, usually it is just not personal. The behavior of other people has a lot more to do with them trying to get their own needs met than anything at all. He finishes with a song that he wrote. It's actually about his son. And I think this is so relevant for any parent, but really any person. If I clearly understand you intend no demand, I'll usually respond when you call. But if you come across like a high and mighty boss, you'll feel like you ran into a wall. And when you remind me so piously about all those things you've done for me, you'd better get ready. Here comes another bout. Then you can shout, you can spit, moan, groan, and throw a fit. I still won't take the garbage out. Now, even if you should change your style, it's going to take me a little while before I can forgive and forget, because it seems to me that you didn't see me as a human too until all of your standards were met. When operating in the system of control and any relationship dynamic, we can so easily forget the humanity of the people in front of us, especially when they're small. Our children are whole people, and it makes it so much more fun to raise them with that awareness. And it becomes so much more simple and easy and connected when we simply just view them as a whole person worthy of our respect, worthy of our consideration. And also when we normalize some of the things, like sometimes we're working on something and we're in the middle of something and we don't just jump when someone says jump. These demands are not really well received by anybody, but especially our young children. Moving into connection mode, curiosity mode, making a formal, actual, real, clear request mode is where we can truly start to see that potential in our relationship dynamics for our needs to be met and for us to meet the needs of the people that we love in our lives. And that is it for this chapter. Thank you so much for spending this time with me requesting that which would enrich life. Such a good chapter. Such good material to learn and practice on a daily basis. I hope that you'll do my little pop quizzes or my assignments throughout the week, building that awareness muscle around your thoughts, your feelings, and your actions, your requests. Are they clear? What do you actually want? Why do you want it? Is it easy to understand? Are you making it clear for the people in your life, or do you have just some premeditated resentments floating around? You just got some expectations for people in your life that don't make any sense at all, okay? And there are actually a couple fun little exercises at the end of each chapter where you can sort of quiz yourself. So if you don't have this book, order it. It is a perfect one to have on your bookshelf that you can revisit anytime. And I promise you, you'll never be disappointed, especially after working through it with me. Some people find this book, I can't even believe it, but some people say this book is dull or like they can't get through it. And I'm like, what? This book blows my mind. It's so good every single time. And every time I've read it, I've really needed it. I've really needed to read it again. It's so easy to slip back into those old patterns. So anyway, let's look at exercise 4 just for fun. A little pop quiz for you. I think I've done this in a previous episode, but I always love doing this for myself. I'm going to read through a few sentences and you can say yes or no if this is a clearly articulated request for a specific action to be taken. Are you ready? Number 1, I want you to understand me. If I had a buzzer sound to put in here, I would say, wrong, okay? If you say understand me, what does that mean? I don't know, like that means something different to everybody. I think I understand you, right? This could definitely provoke a defensive response. This could definitely be interpreted as some sort of personal criticism, get you into hot water, move into that life alienating communication. Am I right? So we got to be clear. So that one is not a winner. Number 2, I'd like you to tell me one thing that I did that you appreciate. I agree that this is solid. It's very specific. Again, these can sometimes feel embarrassing or very vulnerable. Like, I don't know, throw me a bone here. Just give me a compliment. Tell me what I did that you appreciate. I need to hear it. Words of affirmation. Girly queen. So I relate to that person. Okay, number 3. I'd like you to feel more confidence in yourself. This is also very vague. It doesn't really express a request for any type of like specific action to be taken here. Something like, I'd like you to take a course in assertiveness training, which I believe would increase your self-confidence. Is that, you know, that's a clear request. You see the difference. I want you to stop drinking. This seems like it might be a clear request, but it's a no from me, fam. Okay, because this is more about what they don't want the person to do. And we talked about that in the very beginning of the episode. So if you've already forgotten, it's okay. It's been a long hour. A request for a specific action might be, I want you to tell me what needs of yours are met by drinking and to have a discussion with me for other ways to meet those needs. I can already see progress for this individual. It's amazing. Number 5, I'd like you to let me be. This, I mean, what's happening here? I do not know. This person might be asking for reassurance, like the classic, like, just leave me alone, go away. But they're like peeking over the shoulder, you know what I mean? I mean, we've all been there. I always say we've all been there, and then I'm like, I have a moment of panic and insecurity where I'm like, have we? or is it just me? Especially as it gets later into the evening when I'm recording these, I just start being very honest. But yeah, I've been there, I guess I should say. But if someone really did need some personal space, they could say, I'd really like about 5 minutes of alone time to go for a little drive around the block, or I need 10 minutes of time to myself, not I need you to let me be. Well, what are we talking here? Let's be specific. Again, let me be is like, that's an indefinite goodbye. I mean, is that really what you want, Tiffany? I don't know. I'm sorry, I just used the name Tiffany if you're Tiffany. Okay, number 6. I'd like you to be honest with me about yesterday's meeting. Honest about what? I mean, the luncheon, the decision on catering, the lighting, my outfit. What are we talking here? What do you want honesty on? I mean, I'll be honest. You guys know me. I'll be honest. If somebody said this to me, I would have a lot of questions, but it's just not specific enough. I want you to be honest with me, okay? I want you to be clear about yesterday's meeting. What do you want me to be honest about regarding the meeting? I would like you to drive at or below the speed limit. I mean, yeah. I think that's definitely very fair. That's understandable request, and yeah, okay, that one meets my requirements. And let me check. Yes, this also, Marshall Rosenberg, we are in agreement with him. Number 8, I'd like to get to know you better. I don't think this is a very clear request. Again, it seems like it could be, but it's not very specific. It's not like there's a specific action here I could take. So maybe, you know, a request to spend lunch together next week talking, or I'd like to get to know you better. Like, could you tell me 5 facts about your life? Could you give me a short autobiography, please? Okay, number 9, I would like you to show respect for my privacy. Again, yeah, lame. This is just so lame. This is not clear. What's your request? That sounds hilarious to say, like, sorry, it's not clear enough for me. Like, but it is true. Like, what is private anymore? Gosh. But, you know, it needs to be less vague. It needs to be so specific. We need to get a specific action here. So, like, could you please knock before you come into my office? Thank you. Or, yeah, I think that's perfect. You get the point. I'm going way too in depth with this little quiz. Okay, number 10, last one. Will you win it all? Okay, I'd like you to prepare supper more often. Again, I think more often is vague. Let's look what he says. If you circle this number, we're not in agreement. Boom. To me, the words more often do not clearly express a request for a specific action. A request for a specific action might be, I'd like you to prepare supper every Monday night. Yes, easy peasy lemon squeezy. And how enjoyable was that? Okay, thank you so much for spending that extra time with me. I know I was like, I'm going to wrap this up. And then I was like, but I can't resist the quiz. I love a good quiz. I love to test myself. And I hope you guys enjoyed that too. It's so much fun. And I want you to keep doing that as the week goes by until we move on to our next chapter. But move on forward in your life forever, Eva, doing just that. Asking yourself, like, is this a clear request? Am I even asking for something specific, or am I just falling into old patterns? Am I talking like my parents and their parents and parents' parents? Am I just repeating old cycles and just using garbage communication style? Because that's out with the old and in with the new. Okay, we're going NBC route. We are not using crusty, dusty, passive aggression, weird, vague. Just, it's so bored. Not there anymore. It's time to move on. And we can all do it together, which is way more fun. So, final goodbye. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to my podcast. Thanks for hanging out with me, being here with me, reading these books with me. I just get so much enjoyment out of it, if that's not obvious. I'm so passionate about helping people understand the concepts that I personally have found life-changing and so transformative for me in my own personal life as a parent and person. And I really hope that it's doing the same thing for you from the bottom of my heart. I think it makes the world a better place. I think that we all deserve to have relationships in which we can truly thrive and have our needs met and make requests and not demands and just feel so loved unconditionally and understood, like we actually matter, because we really do. It's your God-given birthright to feel that way and for your kids to feel that way. And I just truly hope that the work I share equips you with all the tools to make that possible and bring that to life for you and your family or your future family. And I just hope you have an amazing, peaceful rest of your day. If you want to know more about conscious parenting, and if you want to look into my course, I would love that so much. It's an amazing resource, and I'm so passionate about it and so proud of it. Go to my website, www.themellowmama.org, to check it out. You can enroll there, be part of my course community. You can also find my Mellow Moments on my website there, too, that I mentioned earlier in this episode. Other little things that I have to offer on the website are great, but my Mellow Moments, man, like, these are just... they are solid. I am so proud of them, and I've got a new one coming out May 1st that you're going to love. I personally use my own Mellow Moments. If anybody, you know, I know a lot of people in big tech don't actually use their products. I was listening to an interview recently about that, how they don't, like, give their kids the iPad, or they don't really like their children being exposed to a lot of technology, but they endorse it, they sell it. And I was like, man, you know you've got an amazing product if you yourself use it. And that's how I feel about my products. I'm like, I literally listen to these on a daily basis. I actually get value out of my own products. My own course changed my life because it's the material that I used to raise my children the way that I do and have an amazing experience as a mom. So go to my website, www.themellowmama.org, and check that out. Or don't, just keep listening to my episodes. And you're making such a big impact, and you're so amazing. And I appreciate you so much. If you love this podcast, let me know. Let the world know. I'm trying to get in at least the top 10 of the parenting category here on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and wherever else you're listening to this from. I would love to be considered in the top 10 because I just think this podcast is awesome and so helpful. So if you do too, give me 5 stars. Say something nice. They always make me cry, and I just, seriously, they mean so much to me, the reviews. And if you do write a review and give me 5 stars, send me a message and I'm going to send you a little gift. Okay. And the way you can do that is either by emailing me or by messaging me on Instagram. If you let me know that you and take a screenshot of a 5-star review, first of all, I, again, will probably cry, but also I'll just appreciate it so much. And I would love to give you a little personal gift from me. So please do that. And again, I just hope everybody has an amazing, peaceful day moving forward. Send this to friends, and I will talk to you so soon. Thanks again.